Welcome to Go West Young Podcast, the show about America's public lands and the outdoors. I'm Aaron Weiss at the Center for Western Priorities in Denver. In a minute, we're going to head to southern Utah, home to Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, one of the bookends of President Trump's attack on dozens of our national monuments. We're going to hear from the co-owner of Escalante Outfitters, leading the way as the region's economy transforms thanks to the monument. He will walk us through what makes Grand Staircase Escalante so special, and how far he's gone to try to sit down with Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. But first, let's do the news. Late Friday, Interior Secretary Zinke handed out another rose, so to speak, this time taking Grand Canyon Parashant National Monument off the chopping block. Now, as we've said before, this game is just stupid. The secretary is treating our public lands like a reality show, handing out a rose every week to the monuments that please him, leaving the others hanging, not sure of their future. The irony here is that by pardoning Grand Canyon Parashant, Zinke has undercut all the arguments that monument opponents use. Monuments are too big? Well, Grand Canyon Parashant is over 1 million acres, but it's fine, Zinke says. Monuments that protect landscapes alone shouldn't be considered antiquities. Well, Grand Canyon Parashant has some petroglyphs, but not nearly at the density of a place like Bears Ears. No, Grand Canyon Parashant National Monument is special simply because it is remote, undeveloped, and filled with natural wonders. There are no paved roads running through the monument. Since the monument was designated back in 2000, scientists have found 2 new species of millipede, the first ever bark louse discovered in North America, and an entirely new genus of cricket, and that is just in the monument's caves. The whole of Grand Canyon Parashant contains the Southwest's geologic and human history. That's why it's worthy of protection, all 1 million acres of it. It's that simple, and Secretary Zinke just acknowledged it. Keep that in mind as you listen to this interview about Grand Staircase Escalante, just to the north of Grand Canyon Parashant. Our guest this week is the co-owner of Escalante Outfitters, Nate Wagner, offers tours, cabins, a restaurant in the heart of Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. Nate, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So first off, give me a sense of your business. What is it that Escalante Outfitters does?
Well, basically, when we came here and started this business basically 15 years ago, we just kind of picked up what we thought, you know, what we were new residents of the town, and these are the things that we wanted. So we started an outdoor gear store. We have a cafe with, espresso bar cafe, and we do breakfast, lunch, and dinner in our restaurant. And then we have a series of cabins that we rent out and a campground here. So it's kind of nice centrally located where people can kind of get into town and kind of do their shopping, kind of layover days when they come off of the monument.
Nice. So for folks who haven't been to the monument, what's the big deal about Grand Staircase Escalante?
Well, it's a pretty spectacular place, and the establishment of the National Monument here is kind of a revolutionary idea when it came about in 96. It is a large piece of land here in southern Utah, and it encompasses multiple ecosystems. When it was first established, it was established with a very heavy science component. It was kind of set aside for research. So researchers just come out here and see a place that's wild and visit it and kind of collect data and just do general research on the high desert ecosystems here. Over the years, it's kind of presented itself with all kinds of new antiquities that weren't even on the plate in the very beginning of the designation. One of the huge things that's going on out here right now is paleontological research. Lots and lots of dinosaur bones, probably the biggest dinosaur finds in the United States right now, are coming off of the National Monument. So it's an incredible place full of riparian zones, lots of, small creeks that originate in the Navajo sandstone, tons of slick rock country, just massive amount of slick rock country. And in all those riparian zones, we find antiquities, Native American antiquities, Fremont, and kind of the Anasazi or ancestral Puebloan stuff that's here as well. So it's a pretty awesome spot. It's really remote. It's always been in really remote country. And that's kind of the draw. I mean, people love that. It's a great place to find solace.
You offer tours of the monument. Obviously, it's big, so I'm going to assume there are, you know, some different choices and areas you can go to. What am I going to learn if I go on one of these tours with you, say, for a half day or a full day?
Yeah, so when you go out on a tour with us, what we'd like to do is we'd like to highlight and kind of showcase the science that's been done on the monument since 96. So we go out and we look at, you know, dinosaur digs where people have taken, you know, where universities have come and done research on things like tyrannosauruses all the way to plant matter and shell beds that are out here in the rock features. So we do a paleontological thing. We do a big overview of the great geology here. You know, we have huge, huge sandstone domes, and it kind of moves through Cretaceous into Jurassic time rock. And so we kind of do a big overview so you kind of have a better understanding of what the landscape's all about. And then we kind of, from that, we dive deeper into kind of the plants and the animals that we encounter on these tours. You know, and we also look at restoration projects. One of the huge things that's been going on here is the restoring of the Escalante River Corridor. It is the last free-flowing tributary of the Colorado. So the Escalante River in itself is an antiquity. And it probably by, in two more years, the entire river watershed will be clear of Russian olive. It'll be the first time that anybody's ever taken on a project like that and accomplished a full sweep of removal of non-native tree species right from the river edge. So we kind of look at a lot of those restoration projects that go on here and just kind of have a discussion and open it up, talk about everything from, you know, why... from bee diversity to the local politics of the time.
So we've talked to a few different sportsmen on the podcast, and it certainly sounds like because of the Escalante River being so special in that way, there must be some spectacular fishing along there as well.
Yeah, there is. That's another thing that's pretty awesome about the place is that this is the most southern reach of the Colorado cutthroat trout. So you can come here and fish for an endemic species. And then, you know, the Aquarius Plateau, which is kind of the backdrop to the entire national monument, is a watershed divide for fish. So as you move over the backside of it, you pick up all Bonneville cutthroat trout, and on our side, it's all Colorado cutthroat trout. So it, you know, presents some pretty incredible little waters, and those waters are remote and quiet and cold, free-flowing streams. So, you know, brown trout and Colorado cuts are primarily the fish that we target out on the national monument.
So one of the things we've heard a lot during this monuments review period is about how the economy in southern Utah is somehow in shambles or suffering. Garfield County declared a state of emergency over declining school enrollment. Are you seeing that from where you are, or what's your perspective on that when you hear arguments like that?
Well, where, you know, we are a small community. I mean, here in Escalante, you know, this is a very large county with a small population. You know, it's kind of like small communities all over the West. And what we see here is, you know, with a population of 800, there's just a rise and fall of different, you know, from our school enrollment all the way across the boards. And it's not something that has come about just because the National Monument was established in It's something that this community has always dealt with, as all small communities do. But, you know, one of the main draws to the community early on was logging and timber because of the Aquarius Plateau, which is behind us. And that has nothing to do with the National Monument. There's never timber taken off of the National Monument. But in the Forest Service lands, we do. And it's so remote that those prices of timber are high, and it's hard to get to. So a lot of the small mills have closed in this area. And the amazing thing that we've seen with that is that the mills close, but the tourism industry, as we get more visitation every single year, is kind of picking up the slack and helping kind of fill that economic void. And now we're kind of becoming a powerful contingent for, you know, keeping families here and building families that are moving into the area. So if, say, last year we had a fairly low graduating class in the high school, the incoming classes are much higher. Like, our elementary school kids are all in, they have full classes, and they're placing really highly in the state for you know, for what they're doing. So that's really encouraging. We're seeing this regrowth, this kind of this new renaissance for this area. And I think that the visitation here is helping us find our next step in moving forward.
So with that backdrop, I guess, of perhaps more of a changing economy than a struggling economy, when you heard about President Trump and Secretary Zinke doing this National Monuments review and very clearly including Grand Staircase Escalante as one of the bookends, what went through your head?
Well, it kind of felt like they were pulling the rug out from under us right when we're trying to get something really great going here. And that was hard. I mean, all of the landscape stuff aside and, you know, setting aside an incredible landscape for study and visitation, just kind of taking that from the American public, that was probably a hard pill to swallow on the front. But we also, economically, we felt like, hey, we're working really hard in this community to build this community, and this is, we don't feel like the tourism industry has got to be the only industry. There's got to be, you know, we have to have a diversified economy, but they're really just kind of taking away the, you know, or damaging the product that we sell, which is beautiful landscape. They're trying to reduce the product that we sell, which is this incredible landscape that's open for everybody. And they're trying to kind of set aside and limit who can access it. So that was hard. That's a hard thing for us to deal with, especially when it was kind of a promise that was made to the American people 20 years ago that said this land will be set aside for, you know, for this. And we came here and started building up the economy of these small gateway communities, and now we're kind of seeing that under threat, and that's unfortunate.
So when the secretary came to Utah, he spent a couple days around Bears Ears and then about a day around Grand Staircase. Did you get any face time with him? Did any business leaders in your area get to meet him?
No, I think that was also very discouraging, is that we started the process of trying to contact the secretary early on in this deal. We sent delegates from both our Chamber of Commerce here in Escalante to private business owners to Washington, straight to the DOI office to discuss it with him. Those business owners carried letters from all across our county, and people that rely on the National Monument and the public lands to make a living. There were over 150 letters that were being carried out there, and that's quite a bit for a county with a smaller population like ours. And so we tried to present those letters to him and get voice at the time, and we were denied. And then we sent people back again for a second time, and they were denied. And then when Zinke came out here, we put in two or three formal requests through his office from both the Chamber of Commerce and individual business owners to have just a moment of visitation with Zinke so we can kind of tell our side of the story. And again, it came back denied. So, I think when he was here, he was ushered around by quite a few of the county commissioners who have different ideas of how the land should be utilized. And it seems like it was kind of a one-sided visitation. So it was unfortunate for us. We just wanted to be a part of the dialogue.
In terms of those multiple uses, one of the things we hear a lot about is coal, and the other thing we hear about is ranching. Now, ranching, grazing cattle, is still allowed in the monument. What's your read on grazing levels and the future of ranching in Grand Staircase?
Well, that's an interesting thing with national monuments, is that they can kind of, you can kind of build and customize national monuments as they come into play. The ranching was a very vital part of this community, culturally as well as economically. And so whenever the original monument mission was written, ranching was included and highlighted in the national monuments original proposal. And so actually under the national monument status, ranching is very, very much protected and is continued to, you know, to have people are continuing to ranch on Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. I would say, I believe the number is somewhere like 92% of the entire monument is still being ranched today. And we're not seeing a decrease in AUMs and things like that. We're just, you know, just kind of moving forward to kind of preserve the traditional culture and economic base. So, you know, as it stands, as a monument stands, it is not a threat to the ranching community. You know, we live in high deserts and we're affected by, you know, rain and drought and all kinds of things that just come natural to a really arid environment like that we have here. So we see impact on the landscape, of course, depending on what's happening with the rains and how many animals are out there. You know, and ranching here is just like any other industry, just like ours. You know, there's good ranchers and there's bad ranchers. There's good guides and there's bad guides. There's people who take people out there and they kind of facilitate a safe and a safe trip into the canyons and kind of make sure that, you know, people clean up after themselves. And it's kind of the same with the ranching community here, you know, so we get to see kind of both sides of it. But as it stands, ranching is a part of it, and I see no indication of it not being a part of it in the future as the monument continues.
What else is there economically in terms of the future? Obviously, we've got this recreation economy that is burgeoning. Are there other sectors that you think are ripe for the future in your area?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. What we're seeing here now is we are seeing kind of this new economy arising all over the United States, in that there are talented young people that can do their jobs anywhere in the United States. But they are moving to small communities like Escalante and a lot of these gateway communities because of the National Monument, because that's the place they want to see, that's the place they want to spend their extra time. You know, if they work on a computer all day long, they want to be able to go out and have hikes in the afternoons and enjoy these places. And so we're getting this new kind of economic boom here that's based on, it's even a tech, you know, some of the technology sides of things, where people are just coming here for landscape first, and they can do their job anywhere. And those people are bringing money and resources to the community as well. So that's an exciting new thing that was kind of unforeseeable 15 years ago, where people are working remotely and out here. We've got a couple of new industries that are coming up in town. Most of them right now are kind of built around the tourism industry. But, you know, there's two new manufacturing companies that have come here, primarily because of, you know, this is where those people want to live. One of them is a Spain company, and one of them makes solar filters here in town. So we're seeing a diversification of the economy, and I think a lot of that has to do with that original influx of money coming in that was kind of tourism-based, and as that money comes into the community, it becomes more diversified, and more people invest into different aspects of the economy. So that's a really kind of interesting thing to kind of see unfold. So we're seeing that, and we want to keep those kind of people coming. We want to keep that kind of money flowing through the community.
I know that Secretary Zinke doesn't seem big on listening, based on everything you've told us here so far. If he happens to be listening to this podcast, what's the one thing you would want him to know? What's the one thing you'd want to take away from this conversation in 30 seconds?
You know, I think the deal is that we came here. We are a part of this community. We are, you know, we're citizens. We're contributing to this community. We feel strongly about it, just like so many people do. This landscape invokes really strong feelings towards it and about it and about its management. But it's, you know, this whole reduction thing, I mean, this was a promise that was made to the American people. This land would be set aside for these reasons. And that's going back on a promise made to the American people. And it's taking land away from the public. And that is the thing that gets me the most, is that these lands don't just belong to, you know, mining companies, and they don't just belong to the guides that are taking people out there, and they don't just belong to people that pay for the grazing rights out there. They belong to everybody, and that's what we want. We want to continue to see. We want to keep these lands public. We want people to be able to come out here. We want them to be able to visit these places, you know, become recharged and kind of and enjoy the place, and then, you know, and kind of go on about, you know, do what they do next. And that's an important part. With less and less public lands in the American West, I think we have something really special. And instead of looking at it for the next economic boom, possibly for the next 3 or 4 years, we need to start looking at these lands in a long-term situation. So that my child, I have a 3-year-old son, that he'll have a future here and those lands will be protected for him in the future. So that's kind of my takeaway. That's the thing that's the hardest about looking at reducing these, like something like Grand Staircase, Escalante National Monument.
Last question. For someone coming to Grand Staircase Escalante for the first time, what are the 2 or 3 things you'd say they have to experience, the things that will have them going back and telling everyone back home, oh my gosh, you need to see this?
Well, for one, the feeling of being out there, the remoteness, and you know, it's kind of like the next step up from the national park system. I mean, the national park systems have the beauty, but they also have the crowds. Here we have that in that incredible beauty, but you're alone, and it's that feeling of being like the first person out in these wonderful places. And so that feeling is what I want people to come away with, is that feeling that, you know, this place is for me, and that you know, this is a place where I can go to be alone and see these spectacular sights. So that in particular is pretty awesome. You know, to visit the Escalante River watershed area. The Escalante itself is, like I said, is an antiquity, and then it's the last free-flowing river, last named river in the lower 48. It, just to see it and be a part of it and walk it is a pretty awesome thing. And to look at all the petroglyphs and the Indian antiquities along the river, it's pretty awesome. So I think, you know, those are 2 really great places to start. And then, you know, it's one of those places that there's a lifetime worth of hiking here. And so you move from there into the high plateaus and you get a completely different sense of what the monument's all about. And you walk the kind of the craggy canyons that come off of the Kaparowitz, and you really kind of get a new feeling, a different sense of landscape. So coming here and seeing the diversity is pretty incredible. And to know as much about it when you get here really deepens your enjoyment of this place. So, you know, look into the geology, look into the plants and the animals, look into the paleontology that's going on here. That'll all really kind of make this place pop and come together.
Sounds absolutely gorgeous. Nate Wagner is the owner of Escalante Outfitters in Southern Utah. Nate, thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
We always wrap up the show with a look back at this week in Western history. Since everyone's getting excited about the solar eclipse that's coming later this month, we're going to talk about a map that came about thanks to the eclipse of 1869 and an astronomer named George Davidson. He was a Brit who immigrated to the U.S. and joined the U.S. Coast Survey, an agency that funded research in everything from navigation to astronomy and general exploration. Davidson first traveled to Alaska right after the U.S. purchased it in 1867. Then he went back 2 years later, heading to the Chilkat Valley in southeast Alaska. The histories of Davidson's second trip vary quite a lot. Some claim there was a tense meeting with a native Tlingit tribe in which Davidson predicted an eclipse would come the next day, basically scaring the tribe into leaving him alone. Others say he traveled with a Tlingit clan leader named Koklux, also known as Shotridge, and his 2 wives. That one seems to be a little more likely because Davidson did get to see his total eclipse. He viewed it with his specially prepared telescope, and he made a painting after that of the sun and its corona as he saw it through that telescope. He painted it on a cedar plank that was used to design Tlingit wool blankets, and he presented that painting to Koklux and his wives. In exchange, they drew up a large map of the region, showing up to 500 miles north and west of where they were, showing the geography and ancient trade routes used by the Chilkat Tlingit. They gave Davidson over 100 Indian place names in at least 3 different languages. He transliterated them all into an English spelling, put them on the map. The map is a major feat of cartography, even more so when you realize it was produced from memory in just 3 days by 3 people, 4 if you include Davidson's writing. That map was basically lost among Davidson's papers after he died. It was rediscovered in 2007, and in 2010, an archivist from the University of Pennsylvania took a digital reproduction of that map and hundreds of others back to the Tlingit people. A remarkable map that came about thanks to the solar eclipse that happened this week in 1869. That's it for this episode of Go West Young Podcast. Hey, if you like today's show, go leave us a review on iTunes. It is the best way for new listeners to find us. And we do love hearing your ideas for future episodes. Podcast@westernpriorities.org is where to send your love letters and hate mail. We will be back in about a week. We are talking to our youngest guest yet on the podcast, a 9-year-old named Robbie, who is starting his own nonprofit to take on President Trump's National Monument attack. I am really looking forward to that. On behalf of all of us at the Center for Western Priorities, thanks again to Nate Wagner with Escalante Outfitters. My name is Aaron Weiss, and thanks for listening.